I love seeing everybody chit-chatting, having a good time. But it is 9:30. We better get started. This is the next to last class that we're going to have on the Sermon on the Mount. The Sermon on the Mount. I haven't told you what we're going to be studying starting in December, the new quarter, December, January, February. For the first month in December, we're going to finish what we started earlier in the year, Genesis. And we got up to Joseph and did not proceed. So that's what we'll be looking at in December. And I'm real excited about that. We're going to have five sessions to talk about Genesis 37 through 50. And that will be a big change from the Sermon on the Mount. But we're just going to spend 1 month on that. Here in Matthew chapter 7, we are yet again challenged by our Lord. He's going to step on our toes again. Matthew chapter 7, verses 1 through 12. Thank you for being here this morning. So here's a very famous statement made by Jesus. Judge not, that you be not judged. What does the world say that means? I mean, people who don't know much about the Bible at all can quote this verse. What do they mean? What do they think Jesus means by this statement? You can't judge me. Don't judge me. It's not fair. It's not right. Here's my question, you being good Bible students. Is that what Jesus is saying in this verse? And we're going to look at the context. We're not going to get into Matthew 7, 13 through 29 this morning. That's next week. But it's interesting to me. You just drop down a few verses to verse 16, where Jesus is talking about false prophets, and he says, you will know them, you will recognize them by their fruits. How are you going to know what somebody is on the inside unless you judge them by what their actions are, by what they say and do? So it's going to take some mental thought in our brains. What are we doing when we do that? We're judging them. So Jesus says in this very passage, we're going to have to do some judging. So if Jesus isn't saying, never, ever, ever judge, what is he saying? What is he trying to tell us? That's what I want us to think about this morning. So here's the few verses here, much smaller on the screen. I hope you can still see them. But Jesus proceeds in verse 2, for with the judgment you pronounce, you will be judged. With the measure that you use, it will be measured to you. We'll talk more about that verse in a moment. Let's read verses 3 through 5. That's what I have on the screen, not 1 through 5, 3 through 5. Why do you see the speck that is in your brother's eye, but do not notice the log that is in your own eye? Some of you may have the word beam. Or how can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your eye when there is a log in your own eye? You hypocrite. First take the log out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to take the speck out of your brother's eye. So we've got a rather humorous scene here. One person has a teeny tiny speck in his eye, and what does the other person have? Big old log. And you can see how a speck is mentioned three times in verses 3 through 5. And log is mentioned three times in verses 3 through 5. And here's an illustration of that. There's a bunch out there on the internet if you don't like this one. But that helps us visualize the silliness of what Jesus is describing. Is this the only time Jesus ever seemed to have to indicate to us he had a sense of humor? Can you think of some other examples? When Jesus used hyperbole to exaggerate, or when he was just funny. I think crowds, I mean, we know from what's said at the very end of the Sermon on the Mount that the people were astonished at his teaching. We'll look at that a little bit next week as well. But I think Jesus had people eating out of the palm of his hand. He was mesmerizing when he was at Nazareth. And in Luke's account, it says that they were amazed at his teaching. They were just astonished that he was so eloquent, so capable. But Jesus used humor. he exaggerated to make points. We've seen that a lot. And would you say this is an exaggeration? Who goes around with a literal beam sticking out of their eye? You go to the ophthalmologist. This would be humorous. It may be true, though, so somebody's going to get upset. But imagine if you have an ophthalmologist with super thick glasses coming up to you and saying, "Hey, Walker, how are you doing?" "Doctor, I'm over here." Oh, okay. "Hey, well, let's check your eyes out here." Something like that. See how funny I am? She laughed. All right, so I wanted to just emphasize that with you. Jesus was funny. I've wondered sometimes if he's with his disciples having a private moment with them, and he says, "Hey, let me tell you this joke. A Pharisee and a Sadducee, they walk into a gathering," or whatever. I don't know that they'd be walking into a bar. Jesus told jokes, and I want to emphasize that with you. Did he also talk about extremely serious matters? Yes. He says four times in these verses, verses 1 and 2, he talks about judgment. "Judge not, that you be not judged." Here's why. Because whatever judgment you use, whatever you pronounce on someone else, it will be judged, it will be used against you. With the measure that you use, it will be measured to you. So we just saw four times the word judge, three times as a verb, once as a noun. And then it's actually used measure is used three times here. With the measure that you measure with, it will be measured to you. Our English translations kind of smooth that out. Have you ever been able to sympathize with someone because they are dealing with a sin in their life and you have been there? Maybe not a sin. Maybe it's an obstacle, some burden. They just got a diagnosis for cancer. And you're able to empathize with them. Is that good? That you're able to help them out? When women, couples, have a miscarriage, it is just horribly awful and discouraging and depressing. I mean, a young child has not had the right to live. And while that's certainly tragic, it's also an opportunity for someone to be able to sympathize. So what am I trying to get at? Sometimes I think we could know what somebody else is going through, and we'll use that against them. So when we were facing the temptation, maybe we did, maybe we didn't come out with flying colors. But because we know what they're going through, we're gonna judge them all the more harshly. Can you think of an example or two? I see a head going this way, but I'm not hearing any words. Okay. And people have that attitude, don't they? You know, it's been going on for centuries, for millennia. I'm good, and therefore, because something bad has happened to you, it's not going to happen to me. That's what we want to reason. Can you think of a book in the Bible where people did that? They saw a friend who was in Job. Absolute dire circumstances. Part of the reason why his three friends, his so-called friends, wanted to condemn Job, "You must have sinned," is because they didn't want to even consider the possibility this could happen to them. But that's another story. We need to study the book of Job. Yes, sir. Is that much sympathy? Yeah. Yes, ma'am.
I have a question. This faith, if somebody died, is it a degree of sin? Because the beam went through.
Oh, okay. So I have a beam in my eye and you've got a speck. No, as you know, there's not one sin that's worse than another. there are some sins that are more involved, I guess, that are more complex, and they have dire consequences in comparison to something else. Lying. Is that an okay sin in comparison to murder? No, we would say they're all wrong. We've been studying from Revelation on Sunday nights. Revelation 21:8. Does it make a distinction between murder and lying? All liars will have their place in the fire that burns with sulfur for forever. So I wouldn't say, and that's a very interesting question. I appreciate that. I think Jesus may also simply be trying to make a comparison and say, you think you're there to help somebody else out with a little speck in their eye, and he's simply trying to make the point when you've got this humongous beam in your own eye. You think you're perfect. You think you're great. What you don't realize is you really are not in a position to be helping somebody else because you've got this serious problem. So I don't know if that answers it adequately. Yes, sir? Right. And that word was used there, wasn't it? You hypocrite. And that's why I emphasize that. That's exactly right. So Jesus is condemning the scribes and Pharisees of hypocrisy. He's condemning us of hypocrisy when we think somebody else has a problem and I'm going to go help them. Hey, you know what? Maybe that's okay. Maybe that's good for you to be in a position to help them. But before you do, you better look at your own life. So I think it's possible Jesus is not making a distinction between big sins and little sins, but rather trying to emphasize you are not in a position to be helping somebody when you've got some serious issues in your life. For example, if somebody is in a financial crunch and they're having some serious problems, are you in a position to go to them and start criticizing them when you have maxed out every credit card you own? They have some credit card debt. They have some financial problems. But you have worse financial debt and problems. Somebody is struggling. They started losing weight. And they were doing great. But they fell off the wagon. And what do? Can you believe them? Can you believe that? Here, let me grab another donut. And we're just constantly being critical of other people, but not looking at ourselves. Yes, sir?
But now you use a word that really makes me curious.
Uh-oh.
You can. In other words, if I'm in a bad state, I'm in prison because something wrong that I've done. I can help somebody to not get into the place that I am. But if I'm in Bishnodi, just to criticize or to ridicule, that's different. I can help somebody not to be in the same position that I am in. But in this case, it appears as though you look at the person in the view of condemning or
okay.
That's different.
So is it all right for us to sympathize with people who are struggling with the same kinds of issues I'm struggling with? But what is Jesus getting at here in these first five verses? Your attitude. Why are you talking to somebody about their problem? Because you think you're better than them. And I think that is the contrast Jesus is trying to make, not that you have a more serious sin. And I'm so glad you brought that up. I've got a hand here.
Yeah, I think
it was
back.
Well, he's an elder, so I should call him. But ladies first. It's the same sin.
Same thing going on. And once,
but it's your attitude, maybe.
Yeah. Once you take care of the big thing in our sin, when it says that then you will be, or speak clearly to help others, like you do have to make a judgment.
Okay. And, all right, yeah. Let me go back. And I want us to see that. And I know it's a little small on the screen here. Got my fancy animation going. You hypocrite, which Josh brought out. First, take the log, the beam out of your eye. Then you will see clearly to take the speck out of your brother's eye. Ricardo? Oh, no, did I make you forget what you're going to say, or we already talked about it? Okay, you know better, but you're doing it anyway. Do you remember Matthew 5, verses 17 through 20, where Jesus is challenging us to superior righteousness, excellent righteousness that exceeds that of the scribes and Pharisees? Then in chapter 6, three times, he talks about the Pharisees, and he calls them hypocrites. We saw that in Matthew chapter 6, because when they were giving alms, they were doing it only to be seen. That was their motivation, and that's what Jesus addressed in those verses. I'm looking for the word hypocrite. I know it's right here in front of me. Verse 2, when you give to the needy, sound no trumpet before you, as the hypocrites do. Verse 5, when you pray, you must not be like the hypocrites. Verse 16, this is Matthew 6. When you fast, do not look gloomy like the hypocrites. So this word doesn't occur a lot in the Sermon on the Mount, but it does here in some key places, including Matthew 7 and verse number 5. You hypocrite. Now, this is the Gospel of Matthew. This is just the first of five major discourses of Jesus. We talked about that in our very first lesson a couple months ago. And do you remember in Matthew 23, the series of eight scathing rebukes of the religious leaders, of the scribes and Pharisees? Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites. My Bible, it has an exclamation point. Jesus is mad. He's raised his voice. Hypocrisy. We hate it today. Jesus hated it very, very adamantly then. This is the ultimate example of hypocrisy. When you don't have it together, and you're trying to tell somebody else to pull it together. Do we have a right, though, according to verses 3 through 5, do we have the right to go to somebody and try to help them when they have a shortcoming in their life, a sin? You're shaking your head this way, Megan, and your mom. We have a duty. Do y'all agree with that? It is our duty to go talk to somebody, especially in our church family, or in our physical families as well. Yes, sir?
No, but you have to watch what you say, because if you don't expand enough, you can do more damage by just saying, you know, you need to do this, you need to do that.
Okay.
And not explain it.
I think verse 6 can help us build on that point. So we're going to move on to that. There's a cute little illustration. Verse 6. Boy, I tell you, a lot of ink has been spilled over this verse. I think it relates to verses 1 through 5. And we're going to try to explain that a little bit. Verse 6, do not give dogs what is holy. Do not throw your pearls before pigs, lest they trample them underfoot and turn to attack you. Just one little verse there. We're going to change gears in verse 7 when we start talking about asking, seeking, and knocking. So let's take a look at this. We've seen how Jesus make some statements that almost seem disconnected, but they're not. For example, verses 19 through 24, we saw the connection there about those verses. All right, what I want to observe with you, first of all, just looking at Matthew 7, verse 6 for a moment, not how it relates to verses 1 through 5. There are four phrases here. The first and the last go together, and the second and the third go together, and I illustrate that in the material. So let's take a look here. Do not give dogs what is holy, lest they trample them underfoot. Is that talking about the dogs? That doesn't make sense. What is the them? Do not give dogs what is holy, and lest they turn to attack you. That makes sense, doesn't it? Do not throw your pearls before pigs, lest they trample you underfoot. Is that what it says? Well, no, it says this time, tramples them, the pearls. So there's attacking in both, trampling and attacking. But one of them is you, attack you, and the other one is attack them or trample them. All right, this is very creative. This is how Jesus communicated. This is how he taught. very effectively. Do not give dogs what is holy. And then it'll have two more phrases. And then the last one relates to the first. What's the point? Who are the dogs? Who are the pigs? How did Jewish people feel about pigs? Unclean. That's from the Mosaic Law. All right, so is this talking about Gentiles? Not necessarily. Well, that's what you said, and I was quoting what you said. Okay. I want to suggest that verse 6 is the opposite of verses 1 through 5. In verses 1 through 5, Jesus says, here is a fellow believer, here is a disciple of Jesus, and you are criticizing them harshly. Now, we need to be judged. We need to be considered based on our actions, on what we do and say. But don't judge your brothers and sisters harshly. What's going on here in verse 6? I think it's the opposite. When people of the world, people who aren't trying to serve Jesus faithfully, instead of judging them harshly, what do? We give them what is holy. We throw pearls at them. We're taking what is precious and saying, here you go. So what's going on here? What is it that's holy? What are the pearls?
We're treating and taking care of those who are not children of God, that are more children of Satan, better than we are our own.
We're more lenient on worldly people than we are our brothers and sisters in Christ. That's not the interpretation I heard growing up. And as I've looked at these verses and tried to figure out what's going on here, there are numerous interpretations. I'm not trying to suggest to you, I found it, this is the answer, Matthew 7, verse 6, this is what it's talking about. There are a lot of interpretations about this verse. One of them is, when you are talking to people who aren't Christians about the gospel, you're wasting your time with some people. What do people mean by that, looking at this verse? They're critical. Okay. Or they're simply going to disregard. They're going to trample underfoot the gospel, the pearls of the gospel. What I'm wondering is if, and that's the common interpretation I've heard, just being honest with you, what I'm wondering is if it's more closely connected to verses 1 through 5, and what Jesus is challenging us to do is not be overly lenient on people who need the gospel. What do you think? What's the answer? What's that? Okay. And I think that goes back to that other interpretation that's so common. So what's the answer? I don't know. I don't know. If Jesus is saying, hey, people of the world are going to be judging you based on your righteous living, and so just don't waste your time on some people. Okay. All right. I'm going to give you go ahead. And the answer is, I don't know. I don't know what the correct answer is.
And this it says down here, this is why Jesus didn't do miracles for unbelievers.
Okay.
And not a true believer.
So Jesus would refrain from doing miracles. For example, we talked about Nazareth a little while ago. He could not perform many miracles there because of their unbelief. Jennifer?
So what are you calling holy then on the interpretation that you're giving? Like,
Okay.
What
did you say? Right. When you are not holding them to the high standard, you're justifying their behavior, and you're offering to them this idea of. Okay. All right. I've got to get Nikki here. All right.
These are the problems you don't leave when you're not welcome, and if they will not listen to you, you like to think you are.
Drew, you're way back there. You talk very softly, so you got to speak up.
He also uses similar comparisons in Matthew 15, where he's talking to the Canaanite woman who has been used as a child. He says,
dog, he calls her, well, in essence, calls her a dog. Persistent. It's a part of it. Right. And that's a derogatory term. Gentiles. That will go back to that because the Syrophoenician woman was a Gentile. So that certainly goes back to that. So it has something to do with us interacting with non-Christians. Can we agree on that?
Can we agree on this?
Okay. Two different standards of judgment.
Christ is not promoting that. If we go along some of the reasoning, the pure reasoning, then it appears as though there might be two standards of judgment. And there can be two standards of judgment.
Okay.
There should be one standard of judgment.
There should be one standard of judgment.
Yes.
So instead of just giving you the pat traditional answer, I'm saying here's another possibility. If nothing else this morning, in our brief discussion on Matthew 7, verse 6, I've shown you the structure so that you can see what is it, what goes with what. And I think that's on good footing. I read this, and I think that's what Jesus is saying here. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1 and 4 go together. 2 and 3 go together. It's a short little wisdom saying that's meant to make a strong impact. And it has, obviously, on lots of people for millennia, as they've read Matthew 7, verse 6. I'm suggesting the possibility it relates to verses 1 through 5. So y'all study about it, and we'll talk about it next week. Okay, verse 7. Any other last words on Matthew 7, verse 6? Good. I'm going to get in trouble here. All right, so let's look at verses 7 and 8. Verses 7 through 11 all go together. They're all about asking God for blessings. So this is what Jesus says, and all of us have heard this. We are all very familiar with the statement, ask and it will be given to you. Seek and you will find. Knock and it will be opened to you. Why? Why should you ask? Why should you seek? Why should you knock? Because when you do, when you ask, you receive. When you seek, you will find. To the one who knocks, it will be opened. What in the world is Jesus talking about? You better be careful, Cody. You're moving your arm here, and I'm gonna call on you. Well, we know this has something to do with prayer because of what we're about to read. Do you see the nice parallels here? Ask, and it'll be given to you. Why? Because you'll receive. Knock, and it'll be open to you. Why? Well, I skipped it. Asking. Never mind. I'm messing it up. Ask, seek, and knock. And then he addresses each of those. Again, I should have made nice, pretty parallel lines. So what is this talking about? It's in the context of prayer. Is Jesus saying then, whatever you ask God, he's going to give it to you? If you're a Christian, if you're a disciple of Jesus, Lord, I want a nice red Ferrari in my driveway when I go home. I've asked it. Ask and you will receive.
You receive an answer.
Ask and you'll receive an answer. Yes, ma'am. Okay. James 4, verses 2 and 3. We will get to that in a moment. I just asked amiss. You're accusing me of asking mistakenly, improperly. All right. Let's read verses 9 through 11. Or, continuing the thought, or continue. Which one of you, if his son asks him for bread, will give him a stone? Or if he asks for a fish, will he give him a serpent? If you then, who are evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father who is in heaven give good gifts to those who ask him? Do verses 9 through 11 relate to verses 7 and 8? I think one of the clear indications is the word or. There's some connection going on here between verses 7 and 8 and what you see on the screen right now, verses 9 through 11. You see the word ask. Which one of you, if your son asks him for bread, ask and you will receive. So if a son asks his father for bread, what is the father going to give his son? Bread. And Jesus says, your earthly father, when you ask for bread, he's not going to give him a stone. You can't eat a stone. What good is that going to be? Or if he asks for a fish, he gives him a snake. If you, who are evil, know how to give good gifts. So you've got this contrast between good and evil. Yes, ma'am. Okay, God is not so far away that we can't reach Him and ask whatever we need, whenever we need it.
This would take us back into the latter part, the latter half of Matthew chapter 6. That, you know, you're worried about what you're going to do and what you're going to do.
Okay.
And, you know, God, seek for us to be God. Seek God, righteousness for us. And all the things about is evil. So I believe this fits in that context. So it takes everything.
Okay. Michelle, did you ever get a word in edgewise at home? Oh, I'm kidding. Thank you, Raul. That is excellent. He's saying this thought about asking God for blessings goes back to, for the physical needs that we have, goes back to Matthew 6, where Jesus says, don't worry about stuff, what you're going to eat, what you're going to drink, what you're going to put on. Do you think the whole Sermon on the Mount relates to other parts as well? Of course. Of course. This is very practical, and that's why I wanted to try to slow down, look at these passages very, very carefully. How do you feel about Jesus calling you evil? If you who are evil, what does he mean by that?
Carnal.
We're carnal. In contrast to God, were you going to say that? So sorry. Okay. What were you going
to
say?
Similar, relative.
You're just going to say it a whole lot smarter and more intellectually than me. Back in a Greek philosopher, 3rd century B.C., he said, absolutely. So Jesus is not saying, you're evil, you're awful. What he's saying is, in contrast to God, who is better than all of us, he's not good, he's all that's good and holy. If you then know how to give good gifts to your kids, isn't God going to give good gifts to His kids? It's a given. Yes, sir.
All right, yeah, the option here, they're not mutually exclusive, is that he's being funny here too. Now, if you guys, who are terrible, know how to...
I think, exactly, I'm glad you brought that out. I think Jesus is being funny with us, teasing us a little bit. Do you think maybe there would be a little laughter in the audience as he's saying all that? Absolutely, absolutely. Wouldn't you have loved to have been able to have heard Jesus preach? And yet there are people in the Bible who had the opportunity and they told him, go away, shut up. Yes, sir.
You can read the Word of God and not have a relationship with Him, but when you start the relationship with God and you start
Okay. This lesson, verses that addresses 1 through 12, I've called your relationships. I wonder if Jesus isn't talking in these verses about our asking prayers for ourselves, stuff. He's already addressed that back in Matthew 6. Is he possibly talking about our relationships with others, our prayers on behalf of others? After all, it's a son giving, or a father giving something to his son. That may simply be illustrating how you being evil in comparison to God, you know how to give good gifts. Well, God's going to give us even greater gifts. I've mentioned several times how the book of James closely mirrors many of the teachings of Jesus. And that is most certainly true. James talks about us asking from God. In James 1, ask for wisdom. If any of you lack, I don't have that on the screen here, but any of you lack wisdom, ask God who gives abundantly, generously. That would certainly go back to this idea of God giving us the gifts that we need. Now, Sister Bueller mentioned this concept here, James 4, verses 2 and 3. And I said, well, we'll get to it. Here it is. You desire and do not have, James says. Here's why. Actually, we'll get to that in a second here. You desire and do not have, so you murder. You're at each other's throats. You covet and cannot obtain, so you fight and quarrel. You do not have. Why? Because you don't ask. Is it possible God is not showering me with the blessings I need in my life because I'm not praying to Him and asking Him? We could apply that to all kinds of scenarios in our lives. Do we want to grow numerically as a church? Are we actively praying to God, give me an open door, give me an opportunity to teach somebody the gospel today? Or as a church, we ask very specifically for those kinds of things. Is it possible that God isn't blessing us because we're not asking Him for those blessings? That's what the Bible teaches. You ask and do not receive. Why? Well, I asked for that. What was it earlier? A Lamborghini or Ferrari? I don't even think I'd fit in one of those. You ask wrongly to spend it on your own passions. And I think that goes back to what we're looking at right here in Matthew 7, that this may not be about us asking for stuff for us. It may be also our prayers for others. Yes?
I think sometimes we can also think that we're asking for the bread, but really we're asking for the snake or the rat.
Ooh.
And so we think God's not answering, but really He's giving us the better, and we just don't know.
Okay. That's a very interesting thought. What Megan's suggesting is what we're actually asking for is the stone. I'm repeating what you're saying so everybody can hear. Everybody asks for the stone, and God says, no, I'm not going to give you the stone. I'm going to give you what you really need. I don't think it's right. I'm not sure if that's what Jesus is getting at, but that's an excellent application. That's very good. Did you have a hand, Julie? Oh, okay, that's what you were asking for. And I told you. Did I represent you accurately? Pretty accurately. Does God want us to ask, seek, and knock? Is He going to give us stuff we don't need? Well, He's given us what we need and beyond. And we all understand that providence is... Okay, that's the way we will word that. He doesn't give us stuff that's bad for us. However, can we still take the good gifts of God and use them badly, use them incorrectly? Ms. Bueller. All right, the rain falls on the just and the unjust. Matthew chapter 5, the closing verses of Matthew 5. God lavishes blessings on everybody. Yes, ma'am. From above.
So he's not that's what he gives. He gives a good gift in every perfect gift. We're not going to get anything else but that.
All right. I'm glad we skipped over verses 12 through 15 of James 1, because that's what my sermon is about this morning. One of the thoughts there in that verse, and for those who didn't hear, what Nikki was just quoting is James 1:17, which also talks about the graciousness of God and how He gives us every good and perfect gift. But in James 1:12 through 15, Jesus talks about God not being tempted by evil, nor does He tempt anyone. But do bad things happen to Christians? And does God allow that to happen? Well, Hebrews 12 would suggest that. God allows bad things to happen to us. Why? Because He's malevolent and mean? Or because He wants us to grow? He wants to use that to help us. Yes, sir. Okay, good things don't always look good when they're happening. When we're in the eye of the storm, it doesn't look good, but God really does intend for it to be good. So I'm going to look at the last verse here. We've got 3 or 4 minutes left. But before we do, what would you say verses 1 through 6 is trying to teach us? Matthew 7, 1 through 6. Put it in your own words briefly. Okay, verses 7 through 11. Noe, what were you going to say? I was going to go back. I was going to go back to verses 1 through 6, then verses 7 through 11.
I think it means to clean up yourself, to identify sin in your life, repent of it, remove it, and then you'll have the mercy and grace to help others.
All right, so you clean up your own acts so you can help others. Verses 7 through 11, I think there's an element of that. Helping others. Why are we asking? Why are we seeking? Why are we knocking in the first place? For our personal needs? Jesus already talked about that in Matthew 6. What is He talking about here? Maybe it is more of addressing our personal needs. But I wonder if it's because we want to help others. So, whatever you wish that others would do to you, do also to them. For this is the law and the prophets. Is it possible that verse 12, which does serve as the conclusion to the body of the Sermon on the Mount, we talked about that, I think, in lesson 3. Whatever you wish that others would do to you, do so unto them. Does verse 12 relate to verses 1 through 11? I think it does. What do we call Matthew 7, verse 12? The golden rule. The golden rule. Is this passive? Well, Don't do something to someone bad that you don't want done to you. Is that what Jesus is saying? You know, I just leave them alone. I won't bother them. Won't hurt them. Or is this active? We are pursuing good things for others. Do to them what you want done to you. For this is the law and the prophets. How did Jesus summarize the law and the prophets when He was asked? Matthew 22, for example. What are the two greatest, or what is the greatest commandment? Jesus said, I'll give you the two greatest commandments. Love God and love your neighbor as yourself. We looked in lesson 3 how Matthew 5, 17 through 20 introduces this superior, greater righteousness. And He says, I have not come to abolish the law and the prophets, but to fulfill it. And then He goes through various examples of what's taught in the law of Moses, and He gets to the heart of it. And chapter 7, verse 12 serves as a bookend, so to speak. It binds 5:17 through 7:12 together. Next week, let me get what Miss Mueller wanted to say. Hey, there you go, Acts 20:35. More blessed to give than to receive. As my grandfather would say, you can only keep what you can give away. I always thought that was a good summary of it. Next week, we're going to look at the conclusion. Jesus is going to wrap up His sermon. Verses 13 through 29 is the invitation. You got two choices. And that's what we'll look at next week. Thank you for your discussion and your careful attention this morning. Thank you.